And our guest tonight, Michael Mish Shedlock. We'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast, AM.com. Mish, is there any bright spots out here?
There's a couple of bright spots. One of the bright spots might be the medical profession. Certainly nurses are in demand, and somebody looking for a career choice coming out of college right now might want to start looking along those kinds of lines. And if you think about it, nursing is one thing. We would actually have a real hard time outsourcing the we're going to see some high-end stuff move, but you know, that's it. And you know, stuff related to the commodity sector in Canada, they've got the tar sands. The here in the U.S. maybe something will develop with oil shale. There's always going to be innovation. There's always going to be another wave of something coming along. But the period between those, we're just now consolidating the internet boom. So, you know, looking ahead, I'm just having a difficult time conceiving anything that's going to force the creation of a lot of jobs here in the U.S. But baby boomer retirement and healthcare issues, healthcare problems, that would probably be one bright spot.
All right, let's get some advice to some people, and I'm going to break it down by demographics, because you know, different time periods of your life, you know, affect you. What would you recommend to people who are 18 to 25 years old right now?
Wow, get an education, save, start saving. It's never you're never too young to start saving. We've gotten into a mentality here somehow that you just can't get rid of money fast enough, especially probably my generation. We grew up with the have it now kind of mentality. The latest gadget comes out, we got to have it. SUV comes out, gotta have it. But is that making anybody happier? I look around and it's probably just increasing stress, because people are not living within their means. And I guess and the same advice is probably going to spill across every one of these brackets that you're going to give me. I'm going to say, live within your means.
25 to 54.
25 to 54. That's a pretty broad range. At the 25 end, you know, there's still a lot of cushion, you know, there. By the time you get up to that 54, you had better have, you know, saved up what you're going to need, because the question to be answering for that group is, Social Security going to be there by the time that group retires? So again, you know, have to think, you know, do I want to buy this latest car? Do I want to buy an SUV, or can I get by with a sedan and save some money, not spend everything I make? The by the time you get to 54, you've already pretty much reaped your reward, because to save everything you need in the next 10 years from 54 to 64 is not going to be easy.
Even if Social Security is around, Mish, you can't live off it. It's just not enough.
It's not enough in most places. And I guess that'll be interesting to see if there's actually a shift towards some of the cheaper towns, if you would, in the country. My hometown is actually Danville, Illinois. I've lived in Chicago for close to 30 years now, but I grew up in Danville, Illinois. Somebody once said to me, no wonder you have such a deflationist attitude, Mish. You grew up in the single cheapest home price. And yeah. It's true. In the entire nation. We just sold our dad. My dad died a couple years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And we sold his house for, listen to this, $14,000. A three-bedroom house.
$14,000? You can't even make
right.
a garage for that price anymore.
I know. I just got back from my 35th high school reunion in Danville. Down there with a friend. He's a high-powered attorney, actually, in Washington, D.C. He goes, my God. He said, do you know what this house would go for there? And he goes, $200,000. So, you know, that's the difference.
$15,000?
He said that same house in D.C. would have gone for $200,000, went for $14,000.
Did you get land with it?
This is a tiny little plot, but...
It's a little bungalow, but still, right? It's a starter house.
When we grew up, we were happy. Like, we considered ourselves, you know, middle class. We only had one bathroom, so it was three bedrooms, one bathroom, and four of us, two boys, two girls. So my brother and I had a room. The two girls had a room. My parents had a bedroom.
Yep.
So three bedroom, one bathroom, a garden. My dad grew tomatoes and carrots and vegetables in the garden. We didn't feel deprived. I didn't. To me, it was just normal. You know, we didn't have the latest car ever. We had a station wagon that fit four kids. But you know, now you got to have the SUV. You've got to have the granite countertops. You got to have, all these things that people are just, you know, going in debt for when they can't afford it. And you know, I guess. You know, maybe, you know, that's the message. It'll be interesting to see in the next 10 years if we start to see a turn back towards, you know, some places, you know, like Danville, Central Illinois, maybe even some of the rust areas. Will there be a renaissance in Detroit? I'm having a hard time figuring out how or why, but certainly, you know, housing there is more affordable. What it's missing, though, is jobs. But even though I say that, Danville has a population of 44,000 when I grew up, when I was in high school. And it's 32,000, roughly, right now. So they've lost a third of their population. You know, and when I grew up, there was like two pizza parlors. Now there's 10. The number of retail stores has probably gone up 500%, even with losing a third of the population.
There's probably a mall there somewhere.
Strip malls everywhere, and it's just those are the jobs. Those are the jobs we have, and it's kind of sad to see. You know, the Walmarts, the grocery stores. You know. That expansion is going to end, and when it does, you know, like I said, what's going to happen?
What's your take on what's gone on with gasoline prices? I mean, skyrocketing gasoline prices, paying $3.50 a gallon in L.A. I just saw one here in St. Louis last week, a Shell station, $1.99 for regular. I mean, are they mind manipulating us here, Mish?
Gasoline is a very interesting story, and there was indeed some manipulation. Gasoline prices got to, you know, close to $3.50, and then all of a sudden they plunge about a buck and a half down towards $2, and you know, people are asking, what happened? I mean, it was certainly the biggest drop in the shortest period of time we've ever seen. There's still gasoline prices are still high, but that was a mammoth drop. What happened is Goldman Sachs changed the weighting of gasoline in a commodities index. So anybody that was buying that commodity index had to sell gasoline futures. They knocked gasoline down from like 8.5% down to 3.5%. So there was mammoth selling of gasoline futures. They're not stupid. They had to know what they were doing.
Right.
And it was time to do two things. A, probably make them a lot of money, But just as a little secondary thing on the side here, it probably was supposed to anyway help push in the election.
It didn't, though. It didn't.
That's correct. But, you know, people were saying right after the election, prices are going to start going back up. And I don't know about where you are, but they've risen about 15 cents, you know, just in the last two or three days. So we'll see if they get back up. But, it's hard to say what the motive was. Was the motive just greed and profit? Or that just happened to, you know, give a little kick, a little nudge in the direction for the Republicans, or was that it? But the they did a survey on this, a national survey, and you know, something like, you know, 60% of the people thought that the gasoline prices were manipulated down for the election. And
so we don't seem to have a plan, Mish. We don't have a plan for a nation on how to keep this economy growing and strong. You know, I have a gold sponsor. They give out free gold investment guides and packets, and they send me information every week about various aspects of gold. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they talk about the Chinese and how they're buying a lot of gold and mm-hmm. how they are our single biggest investor in this country, that they can control us economically. If they sold off the dollar, we'd be in deep trouble. I mean, how can we allow all this to happen?
They not only allowed it, somehow we encouraged it. And somehow, I mean, we've even got people arguing that, you know, this is a good thing to do. Look at how prosperous we are. But it's one thing to look at, you have to look at the balance sheet two ways. You got to look at the balance sheet and say, what are my assets, but what are my debts? And then you say, okay, well, the ratio of assets is bigger than my debts, so I don't have a problem. Well, that's wrong. It's fallacious to look at it that way, because what happens if the price of your assets that you're holding declines?
Right.
And the big one, obviously, is housing. We've talked about it all night. So all of a sudden, that declines. Now you've got that debt. That debt doesn't go away, but and you've got an asset that's no longer supporting all of the debt you've got.
And you can't even sell the house because you can't make the payment to pay off the mortgage.
That's correct. People are already being trapped into their houses that they cannot sell just because they don't have cash to bring to the table. And this goes back to something I said earlier. I mean, there's going to be a rude awakening for a lot of people, and it's going to be forced, or the market is going to force it on them. They'll either do it voluntarily, or the market will force it on them. And that is to start living within their means. And it's a shift. It's long overdue. It has to happen. So it will. You know, will the Fed fight it? I don't think we finished that discussion. The Fed slashed those interest rates and made just a bigger bubble. And I cannot conceive, not that there can't be one, but I'm struggling to conceive a bigger bubble than housing that keeps people employed. See, it's not just a bigger bubble. We need something that is going to keep people employed. And I don't see it. I don't see what the next bubble is. That's another reason why I'm confident that this recession is coming, because there is no next bigger bubble coming that's going to keep people employed.
What do you think interest rates will go down to again if that happens?
An interesting question. It's conceivable that we get all the way back down to 1-3% again, but more problematic is what happens to long-term rates. Remember the Greenspan conundrum, where they kept hiking and long-term rates didn't go up; it just more or less stayed the same thing.
Yeah.
If he starts cutting again, trying to stimulate, you know, housing or whatever. Who knows, you know, what Bernanke, it'll be Bernanke this time. Who knows what he's willing to try. But if, you know, heaven help us, if the long bond revolts and those rates, for whatever reason, head back up. I don't actually think that'll happen, but I'm open to the possibility of it. The other thing that might happen is that perhaps interest rates disconnect from, or excuse me, mortgage rates disconnect from the long bond, if or the 10-year treasury. If we start seeing, as I suspect, more foreclosures, more bankruptcies, more mm-hmm. real estate owned by banks that they've got to get rid of, maybe we see a disconnect between what mortgage rates are and what treasury rates are. That hasn't happened yet, but that would be extremely bad news for housing if we get that disconnect. If the Fed starts lowering rates, treasury's yields collapse, but mortgage rates don't follow those treasury yields down because of rising bankruptcies. That's a very possible scenario here. So it can play out in a number of ways. I don't think we're going to see this much talked about. What if China goes out there and sells, you know, all these treasuries? In effect, they would really be, you know, cutting their own throats to do it. It's just not likely to happen. Who are they going to sell them to? You know, what's more likely, however, is they just stop buying so many. But I don't worry about that. I actually think the demand from within the U.S. is actually going to pick up and replace that demand. We've already seen it. Some of these auctions, foreign demand has dropped, and Treasury, you know, haven't collapsed. And this gets back to a savings rate in the U.S. that actually it has to rise. So, you know, some of the money to, you know, buy these treasuries will come from within the United States somewhere, and that's a good thing.
Will there be deals to be made in these foreclosures, or is that jumping on somebody else's misery?
Oh, it's certainly not jumping on somebody else's misery. If you can make a deal, then you know, why shouldn't you? The question is, when's a good time to do that? Right now is probably a bad time to do that. You're seeing, you know, at some of these auctions, there was actually a big one in Key West. This wasn't a foreclosure, but this was just an auction. They were, you know, trying to get rid of some houses.
Just trying to move the property, yeah.
But the bids weren't, you know, they had minimum bids out there. The bids weren't hit. So the houses didn't get sold. And we're seeing the same thing in some of the bank-owned real estate right now. This thing, you know, goes to auction, or you try and buy it out of foreclosure. The bank wants out of it the amount of money that's owed, even if the house isn't worth that much.
Right.
Right now, there's just not a lot of good deals. And in 3 more years, when the bust gets more seriously underway and banks get tired of sitting on all that property, you know, maybe there'll be some deals then. But remember, this can play out. This can last a lot longer than anybody thinks. Housing prices in Japan fell for 18 consecutive years.
They just kept falling and falling and falling?
Every year for 18 straight years.
What was the average percent?
All I have is the scale on that. But okay. If you look at the Nikkei, that went from, what, 43,000?
44,000.
All the way down to 7,000, I think.
Yep. 7, stay with us, Mish. We'll be back with you in just a moment. We'll take your phone calls next hour with our guest, Mish Shedlock. Also, by the way, those of you who have been writing in, we do have the audio version of our book, Worker in the Light, available. Amazon.com has it at a discount. It's a series of CDs, so go ahead. It's there for you for the taking. And the book, of course, is available at all major bookstores and also Amazon.com. Well, with the Democrats controlling the House, and it looks like they're going to end up controlling the Senate, what does this do to the economy? Does it make it any better or any worse?
I don't know that it matters much. We're still going to see whatever legislation comes out. We need to get weaned off of this spend. And it'll be interesting to see if that happens under the Democrats, but I doubt it, especially if we start, entering a recession. The first thing that anybody's going to want to do, instead of letting it play out, which is what needs to happen.
Right. They don't want to bleed, but it needs to bleed.
Right, right. Nobody wants to take the medicine now, and it just pushes the problem off into the future, making things worse. The David Walker, the government accounting office, is one of the few straight shooters around, and he was just talking about this just the other day, that the national debt, which is $8.5 trillion, could reach $46 trillion adjusted for inflation, and the interest payments on that debt would take all the taxes the government collects today. And actually, if you look, Japan is nearly in that same situation themselves. Japan didn't have any debt. When things busted over there, they got into deflation for 18 years. The government tried build bridges to nowhere, tried all kinds of things, just wasted trillions and trillions of dollars. They've got so much government debt now, it's 150 to 250% of GDP, depending upon which set of numbers you believe. And it takes an enormous percentage of revenues to service that debt, even with interest rates in Japan at 0.25%. What happens when interest rates in Japan normalize? Not going to be pretty. We can't afford to be in the same situation in the United States. Yet every indication is we're going to keep spending until something breaks.
Well, Mish, it's going to be an interesting couple years, isn't it?
It really is, and there's a lot of things to watch. What legislation we see, will it be protectionist? We're already seeing, we're going to be wasting. I didn't see the estimates on the wall we're going to build on the border to Mexico, but that's just waste. If they really want to stop illegal aliens from entering the country, it's easy. All you got to do is fine employers who hire them. That would stop it in one second flat. Instead, we're going to waste billions of dollars building a wall that's not going to do any good. Just as, so here we are building walls, ironic, with the collapse of the Berlin Wall not that long ago.
Well, that's absolutely true. So let me ask you, if you were named the head of the economy, okay? Mm-hmm. It was your job to fix everything. What would you do?
Oh, my gosh. I would bring the troops home from Iraq. I would pull them all out. Now, that would add a lot of people here in the United States, those military that would be unemployed. We'd have to do something with them, at least phase that in. So I would put them I would also pull our troops out of Europe. And I would put them on the coast, manning the security, manning our ports of entry, doing jobs like that here in the United States. Mm-hmm. So instead of having soldiers living in Europe, living in Japan, spending money over in Europe and in Japan, I would bring them home. Those troops would be spending money in the United States as opposed to Europe. The amount of money we've wasted in Iraq is just staggering. They've admitted $500 billion, and that's what they have admitted. There are another hundreds of billions that's kept off of the books that they've not admitted. That money certainly could have been spent better here at home. For instance, what if instead of bombing the hell out of Iraq, we build some nuclear power plants out west, sitting on top of all that oil shale that I talked about?
Right.
Heated up use those nuclear reactors, heated up the earth, bring that oil. Now we don't even need that oil from Iraq. We tell them to go to hell. We've got enough oil in the oil shale. The problem is getting it out. It takes a mammoth amount of heat to generate that. But, a $500 billion was a lot of money. So, maybe we could have done something over here. Maybe we could have built up our power grid in the United States, built up our infrastructure here, done something with building liquid natural gas terminals, that kind of thing. There's so much things that we could have done with the money that we wasted there. But other things you have to cut spending. I would cut the military budget. I would I'm in favor of free trade. We can't hide, like it or not, we have to deal with a global economy, and we're going to have to learn to compete in that global economy. So I would the farmers would scream, but I would cut subsidies on crops. They did it in New Zealand, and New Zealand is far better off for it. It increased competition. They wouldn't even go back if they had a choice to go back. I would kill the GSEs. I would get rid of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We don't need government programs convincing people that housing is a good thing, and that to promote housing over renting. That's not the government's job to do that. The government needs to get out of the way. So there would be short-term pain, but nobody wants to have that short-term pain. But that's what's needed. The first country in the world that really just goes to free trade and says, regardless of what any other country does, we're gonna have free trade, and we're gonna be open for business. That country is gonna win. Instead, we fight these games with Europe all the time. Well, if you don't cut your sugar tariff, we're not cutting ours. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, the price of candy goes through the roof because we've got artificially inflated sugar prices. It's that kind of thing. We need to get rid of it. Didn't the Republicans run on a campaign of smaller government? We've got more government employees now than ever.
What would you do with the IRS, Mish? Would you change the tax code and structure?
I certainly would. I would go for some kind of flat tax or other.
What about a use tax?
Possibly a combination of the two, to encourage savings. I don't think you would want to do a totally value-added tax like they do in Europe, but maybe some combination of a flatter tax with part of it being based on consumption, that kind of thing. Certainly something fair. I would certainly allow, this is a big one, I would rework this Medicare bill. That was just a big giveaway to the major pharmaceutical companies. We can't import, drugs, prescription drugs from Canada into the United States. The bill was written such that Medicaid and Medicare can't even do group bargaining. The
maybe they need to borrow.
we need some drastic changes. Instead, you know, what we're likely to see is more debate about gay rights. You know, we need some dramatic changes along the lines of what I said. And yeah, there would be some pain for that. Somehow we need a redistribution of wealth, but it has to happen naturally. It has to happen through the market as opposed to socialist,
that's the key.
And give to the poor. But, you know, I think with the right kind of environment here in the United States, that can happen. But the consequences of shutting off all of that spending at one time, you probably got to phase it out. But you do have to start somewhere. The other thing I would do, this whole mess stems from a credit bubble. We've got banks, you know, willing to, you know, lend money at credit creation coming out of the air. I would gradually raise the reserve requirements at banks. So right now it's at 0%. They're loaning literally every penny they get in. I would gradually raise the reserve amounts on savings and checking accounts from 0% by 10% a year, you know, maybe all the way up to 80%.
I bet if someone with lousy credit wanted to go buy a brand new car, he'd get financed.
Oh, sure.
No matter what.
No matter what. Somebody would find him. A car dealer would find somebody to lend that guy, even if he was upside down already in his existing car and had to buy that car for, you know, $35,000 car, even if he had to pay $47,000 to it, we're seeing that kind of lending of $5,000 and $6,000 more than the car even sells for, because people are upside down on their trade-ins by that much. You know, that's how ridiculous it's got.
What's happening, Mish, and it's the biggest problem, the disparity between the haves and the have-nots, and those that have aren't fixing the problem. They're in control. They're the politicians. They're the elitists. They're the Illuminati. You call them whatever you want. They don't care about the have-nots because they've got what they need, and that's why everything's in such a mess.
That is, that they claim to care. You know, they have these policies of whatever they are. Usually some giveaway program to build a bridge in their district that's not needed. And, of course, so everybody, you know, hops on the bandwagon. But we probably need the line item veto to get rid of some of this kind of nonsense, too. It's like you vote for my pet project and I'll vote for your kind of thing. That also is just wasting hundreds of billions of dollars. And it's just, why is this guy doing it? Just so he can get reelected. That's why he's doing it. It's not because he thinks this thing is right. You know, where's the moral integrity in this country?
Heck, he can't hold a real job, so he's got to get the taxpayers to pay his salary.
Well, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. Somehow we need, I don't know, maybe it's, you know, lobbying. We need to do something about, you know, lobbyists. We don't even have elected representatives now. We've got elected lobbyists. These guys are vote on the basis of on a bill based on, you know, how much money they got from some corporate lobby from somewhere, which, you know, that's just another one of the problems. That's the only way this Medicare bill could possibly have passed. People didn't even read that thing, you know, and the signing bills that, you know, nobody even reads and understand, and is literally written by corporate lobbyists. Well, if we want corporate lobbyists to write bills, why don't we just elect corporate lobbyists right up front instead of congressmen and at least cut out the middleman?
Mish, if a person makes 50 G's a year, and that's gross money, he gets taxed, obviously, what do you think a realistic number is that that individual should put in the bank every year and then spend the rest, enjoy one's life? You know, you don't want to die with everything in the bank.
No, you don't want to die with everything in the bank. You want to have fun. You want to raise a family. Or not. I mean, we don't have kids, but most people do. You want to go out and do things. Maybe you want to travel. But it's a matter of setting priorities. I don't think there's one answer to that. Just because $50,000 in Chicago in Danville are two completely different things.
Yeah.
You're
a king in Danville at $50,000 a year.
You would be a king in Danville on $50,000 a year. That is correct. $300,000 in Danville would probably buy one of the best houses in the county. Seriously.
Would buy Danville.
Well, you can buy, in my dad's neighborhood, you could buy a whole city block of houses for that and actually make money on them. They're oddly enough, you can take those
and rent them all out.
And rent them out and actually have positive cash flow. Try and get positive cash flow on a million-dollar house in L.A.,
you can't do it.
You can't do it. But what people do need to do, rather than say how much of $50,000 do we need to save, it's people need to have at least a year's worth of savings in the bank, sitting there. They don't touch. Or, you know, in short-term CDs or short-term treasury notes. With something that's extremely
what do you mean?
Liquid
so if
and
you,
cash.
So you're saying if you
a year's worth of expenses.
Expenses, not income. So, I mean, you're not saying if the guy makes 50 G's a year, you got to have 50 G's put away. Or are you?
No, I'm saying if whatever your expenses are, look at your mortgage, look at your property taxes, look at your food bill, look at your education costs. These things are going to vary. You know, how much of that do you have? The average person doesn't have a year saved up. I doubt that the average person has 2 months saved up. But then you get into averages. Averages are very confusing because certainly somebody like Bill Gates, even, you know, no matter how lavishly he's living, he's got way more saved up than that. So when you average all this thing out and you say, well, you know, the average doesn't look so bad. Well, I don't know. It's skewed by, you know, these top end, you know, wealthy people that the numbers, when you look at them, might not make a lot of sense. But it is what can you do to, you know, put that away and have that cash there. I tell you, right after 9/11, I lost my job, and I was out of work for almost 3 years.
And what kind of job was that?
Computers, okay. Programming for the largest banks in the country, Chase Manhattan, U.S. Bank, Bank of Montreal, First National Bank of Chicago. Those jobs dried up. And, you know, had it not been for a lot of savings from my wife, and we used it almost all up, by the way, as you might guess.
That's scary.
In 3 years.
Yeah.
But that's how nasty things can get. And people are acting as if this economy has no problems and as if, you know, they don't see any potential difficulties coming down the road.
Stay with us, Mish. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.